This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho.
Men in Blazers World Headquarters.
It's the Men in Blazers podcast.
We are back.
Backity back, back, back.
Men in Blazers.
Yeah.
Proud winner. Zero Golden Globes.
Yeah,
keeping that streak alive.
Yeah, it's tough to win when you're not nominated.
It's true, fella.
Yeah,
it's
or not making anything in any of the categories that we would get a nomination for.
Like being good at things.
Yeah.
But we're back, irrespective. First pod 2017.
Yeah.
Year of the Rooster.
Oh, it is?
Year of Tottenham Hotspur.
Huh.
Oh, you look tan.
I am a little tan. It's fading quickly, Rog.
Did you have some work done down in St. Bart's?
I had a little bit of work done. It's of the places to go in the world not to have work done, St. Bart's, I imagine it would be quite expensive.
It is.
A lot of French people,
yeah.
Rog. A lot of French people.
In my imagination,
very nice.
It's packed full of arms dealers.
Yeah.
Prostitutes.
Yeah.
Or John Terry.
Yeah.
Which one are you?
It's...
Which category do you fit into?
Well, that's a Venn diagram, isn't it? I'm a little bit in the shaded area of all of those things. In some aspects of my life, Rog, I'm afraid.
It was a leading question. You do look great.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. St. Bart's, beautiful island. If you ever get a chance to go there and you can handle all the French people, go there. It's lovely. Cheeseburger in Paradise. That's where the song was written, Rog.
Really?
By Warren Buffett. It was the other Buffett. Jimmy Buffett.
Warren Buffett's recording career, sadly. Not quite caught on.
Jimmy Buffett wrote Cheeseburger in Paradise.
He did.
In St. Bart's, apparently at Cafe Select, but it might not have been.
He probably only went there because he thought it was a Simpsons theme park.
The airport is something else, though, Rog. The landing at the Gustavia Airport.
Yeah.
Because you have to land right over a mountain or a hill, to be more accurate.
Hillock.
You have to land right over a hill. You can only, and it's a very short runway, so you can only go in with a single prop or turboprop or a double prop.
Oh, you make it sound like Fantasy Island.
Twin prop. And it is like Fantasy Island. And you have to land on a downhill runway because at an angle of about 3 degrees.
You personally, or do they allow pilots to?
They allow pilots, but they only allow very few pilots to go and do it. You've got to almost be a local to land there. And it's such a fascinating landing. The place I was staying was right opposite the runway on the other side of the bay because it's right on the beach. I became a plane spotter over my vacation. Hours and hours just watching through the binoculars, planes struggling to land. But making it. Didn't see an accident.
Yeah, you didn't. I imagine you calculating the success rate of approaches to St. Bart's Airport.
Good. It was so good.
And the people who were landing probably were completely confused because they're not used to flying so low over a town without strafing the peasants below.
Yeah, some of them too. Particularly the ones in helicopters. Yeah, absolutely, Rog. How about you? How's your vacation?
I read a lot.
Yeah.
I did something that at end of year that I realised I'd not done at all in 2016, David.
Oh, congratulations.
Which actually go to the movies.
Oh, good.
You know, physically,
you
I'm a big film lover, but I've not been to the movies all year. Not been to the cinema.
Now I get all the BAFTA DVDs at the end of the year. I don't even bother.
Have you physically sat in a cinema?
I did not physically sit in one cinema for the whole of calendar year 2016.
Yeah, I mean,
a screening room or two.
I love movies, but my life's so full of football and Netflix. By the way, how are people not talking about Nobel?
Oh, you emailed me about that, Rog.
It's Gomorrah good. It really is. But I went 5 times in 8 days over the holidays. Saw a glut of remarkable films.
What was the best thing you saw?
Probably Crouching Tiger, Hidden Fences. But I sobbed through a couple of films.
Yeah.
Two I cried most in.
Yeah.
Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, I haven't seen it, but I hear it's very sad.
It cements Casey Affleck's place as the Dennis Quaid to Ben Affleck's Randy.
Yeah.
And the other was Sing, the movie.
My kids love that.
I'm not too proud. I spent the last half hours of Sing. Like, have you seen it? Did you cry? Last 30 minutes. And I believe I'm not the only one. Just sobbed in front of my children, which is not an advisable approach to life. That being said.
If you can't cry in front of your children. I spent the whole of 2016 crying in front of my children.
How many times have you seen your dad cry?
Once.
Yeah. Seen my dad cry once also.
Yeah.
And I always thought as a father you had an allotment of wants, which I've used up in Sing in the last 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I hadn't been in a cinema all year and I was just shocked by how weird and old tech it is to actually go into a cinema as opposed to your own home. Surrounded by strangers.
Yeah.
In a dark room, packed like sardines with the talkers, the cell phone checkers, the burpers in Yiddish, the grepsers. The heavy breathers, the candy wrapper crinklers.
Yeah.
But the talkers, David, it's the worst. I don't know what it's like when you grew up, but I grew up in Liverpool. And God forbid, if you dared talk in the movies once the trailers had finished, you could talk through the trailers, right?
Yeah.
But once it had gone properly dark and the movie started, no matter what movie I went to in town in Liverpool, and I must have gone to about 400 movies, I calculated, in my youth in Liverpool. In each theatre, there was always one large, menacing Scottish person sitting in the back of the theatre just waiting for a talker to talk. And I don't know if it was the same menacing Scottish man or a different one, but the first sign of talking in the theatre, he'd just bellow from the back of the bowels of the theatre into the darkness. He'd always scream something like, "I paid for this ticket! If you don't shut up, I'm going to glass you."
Oh, my God.
But the thing about this Scotsman, David,
yeah,
even though it wasn't me doing the talking, him screaming would just totally unsettle me. Mm. It would just chill me to the bone for the first hour or more of the movie. It gave me so many questions, like, how does he have a glass on him? Is there a beer in it? Does he always carry a beer glass around? Is it empty or is it sole purpose just for glassing? What's that? It's my glassing glass. My conclusion of this holiday, David, American theatres, they do need more menacing Scotsmen in them.
Yeah.
I think Charlie Adam could actually apply for a job.
Maybe better food and maybe better sound.
Talking about better suits.
Yeah.
Better food.
Yeah.
Better sound.
Mm.
We're at NBC.
Oh, NBC Sports Network, NBC Sports World Headquarters, Rog, up in Stamford, Connecticut. You know, I don't want to denigrate other sports networks. I just want to say I've worked at a few of them, and I've never felt more... I'm not mentioning any names.
How many have you worked at?
Fox. I'm not mentioning any names of any of the other, but I've never I've never been made.
We'd like to work at Gold.
I've never been made the BBC. I've never been made to feel more welcome at any production facility than we were at NBC Sports Network. It was wonderful. Everybody from our PAs and stand-ins,
amazing,
to the women who shaved the back of our heads to make us look bald on television, all the way to everybody.
That was Rebecca Lynch.
It was absolutely fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic.
We had a fantastic
Everyone was
time
wonderful.
In Stamford.
Yeah,
we did our show live in their studio.
Yeah,
it is enormous.
Not so much in their studio.
Oh, it is enormous. So where they broadcast from?
Yeah.
It's almost as large as your guest bathroom.
Yeah, we could do 45 shows from their Embassy Row shows in the sides of that one studio.
Second, the talent.
Yeah.
Robbie Mustang.
Yeah.
His wife's pies.
Oh.
Taste of victory.
Mrs. Musto's pies. I mean, how quickly do we need to get those out? Limited edition Mrs. Musto Men in Blazers pie.
Carl Martino, who looks more and more like an Olivier Giroud bobblehead doll every day.
Yeah.
And Rebecca Lowe.
Yeah.
Oh, Rebecca, pound
Lady
for pound.
Low, the low dog.
The single greatest football broadcaster in the world.
Yeah.
Her laugh.
Pound for pound.
Yeah.
She's like the Conor McGregor of global soccer broadcasting.
She glass him in a heartbeat. I believe her laugh is medically proven to cure all illnesses known to man. Let's give it a quick listen.
Yeah.
It's a good laugh.
Oh. Feel hopeful.
Do you think she genuinely finds us funny or is just tolerating us?
I think she's contractually obliged for 7 minutes 20. Did you notice? Once that clock went past 7 minutes 20, just her whole approach to us changed completely.
Yeah.
It's all business.
Yeah.
But we're still grateful to all of them.
Yeah.
Because after years of not being invited, David, it was lovely to be on their turf, to desecrate their holy of holies.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean Carl's dressing room and his armada of hair products.
Yeah, it was a lovely backstage area.
Oh, it was. And his dressing room, each one of his hair products taunts us more than the last. Just to be with a remarkable team of people in front of camera and behind it that served up. How many games have they done over the holidays? Like 12,872?
A few more.
And their last thing was to put out our crap. And they did it with a passion, dedication, detail, not dimmed a jot.
Yeah.
We did try our hardest to put an end to that passion for football, David.
Yeah.
But even we couldn't succeed.
Yeah, we tried. We tried. Okay, Rog, we've got a packed show after a frenzied, festive period during which the football came thick and fast. We combed through
heavy.
The title contenders slash pretenders. Team by team, we're going to hit the FA Cup weekend highlights, choosing to exclude Ipswich's 2-2 draw with fifth-tier Lincoln City. You
That's
can tell that this lead was written by producer JW. And we break down the opening scene of the highly anticipated sequel, Bruce Arena Reloaded, in which he calls 32 MLS players up to camp, including 7 newcomers. That
Reality
camp is in
TV
California.
Show.
Rog, Okay, let's crack open the Guinness. First of the new year, Rog.
Yeah, it is. A year in which the Big Six have reasserted themselves. Those who want to hear more about Ipswich can listen to producer J-Dub's podcast. Yeah. Switch, yeah, mother... Yeah. It's very good. It's quite good. I'm just reading the script he's given us.
Yeah.
Cheers, Rog.
Happy to health and happiness, the year of the rooster.
Yes, the year of the rooster, Rog. No doubt about it. Okay, to the football. Let's start with the FA Cup, Rog. The magic of the FA Cup, which these days is more creepy uncle pulling a quarter out of your ear than David Blaine sawing himself in half.
Oh, it was a tough weekend, David. Yeah. It really was. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
The FA Cup, and this feels like an annual conversation for us. It is so suboptimal. I'm surprised it's not sponsored by Men in Blazers. It is the Men in Blazers of football trophies.
Mm.
Serves really for me to like just trigger an overwhelming sense of nostalgia. I'm sure it does for anyone who remembers the FA Cup when it really was the FA Cup, one of the biggest games of our childhood, by virtue of it being the only game live on television of our childhood, right, David?
Well, of course, one of the reasons that we are nostalgic about it is that we only saw the final at Wembley.
Yeah, and we had hair.
We didn't really see these early round games. We might have followed along with them on the radio, might have followed them on CFAX, on some sort of text-based TV system, but we had no idea how bad these games were.
But we were allotted one live game a year, and we made the most of it. And this was before the internet and cable television, which allowed us to follow every detail of the European leagues and the Champions League.
Yeah.
But the FA Cup, it's become like the MTV of English football, once grand and coveted and desirous, now slightly soiled, shabby. It's just there, Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, you only need to look at last year's final. Van Gaal's United beating Alan Pardew's Palace. Daddy, did Alan Pardew once manage Crystal Palace? Yes, son. The feat of reaching the final did nothing to boost their job security. Yeah. I think 2 days after the trophy, Van Gaal was chucked overboard. And the FA Cup really means that little. Hence, you saw depleted teams almost everywhere. Liverpool's record average age of their starting 11, 21 years and 296 days. That was with Lucas Levy, who's about 52. Playing plucky Plymouth Argyle, owned by GFOP American-based owner Simon Hallett. Manchester United, oh, nostalgic. They exhumed Wayne Rooney, who emerged from mothballs to grab a club joint record 249th goal.
It's nice to see your squad players get a run out, Rog.
Yeah, and talking to squad players, how beautiful was it? Amazing emotional high of the weekend.
Yeah.
Watching John Terry take the field again.
I thought you were going to say Pedro.
Seize the chance to have one more red card for all time.
He can retire now. He can retire now.
It was like watching James Taylor play his greatest hits. Like, he can't do it again, John. Except just one more time, mate.
Except with just a little less foot speed, Rog, than James Taylor.
Oh, it's still an emotional high. The only sides who took it seriously all weekend were like ones that sounded like they'd been ripped from the pages of a Thomas Hardy novel.
Yeah.
Eastleigh, Stourbridge.
Yeah.
Casterbridge sadly didn't make it.
Yeah.
My highlight, two of them, Davo, watching the Sutton United manager vape on the sideline live on television.
I said to myself, that was so good.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Now that is the magic of the FA Cup.
A bit of vaping.
And same game.
Yeah.
Alan Pardew.
Yeah. The cravat.
Oh, yes.
That's amazing.
Amazing. What would go through his mind? He was, first of all, for those who don't know, he was at the stands at Sutton United, which for the Americans who don't understand the concept of Sutton, let me just think of a Texas, your average Texas high school stadium. Now half it.
And then maybe half it again.
And then just like then generally.
Put the football you see in it being way less important than high school football in Texas.
And just make everything within that stadium essentially smell of spilt lager, police horse turd, and urine.
It's like wearing a tuxedo to McDonald's. Honestly, it's just the oddest thing.
Who would think, Dave? Yeah, got it.
Do you know who would think?
Going to see him.
Do you know who would think? Alan Pardew. Rog, Alan Pardew would think.
It is absolutely just a phenomenal act.
That was the true curse of Rog, right there. It wasn't him losing his job after you interviewed him.
Funnily enough, I will take full cop for this. When I interviewed him, which was in the summer pre-season, I did stop the interview in the middle. We were talking about pre-season and how you get your team to peak and what the real focus of pre-season is. And I stopped the interview in the middle and I said, J-Dubs, just press pause for a second. I couldn't help myself. I said, I don't say this to many people, Alan, But do you know what would look good on you?
A cravat?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah. Wow. I said, it's just you. Not many people can pull that off, but I believe you're in the tiny category.
Try it out.
Of people who can bring the cravat back.
Try it out at a smaller football team. Let's see what it looks like on camera. That's FA Cup first.
Imagine Jurgen Klopp just like looking at it and thinking, yeah, I'll add the cravat and the vape to my repertoire.
He'd like a vape.
Kinnell?
Yeah.
A vape.
Anyway, this is all Roger's way of avoiding talking about Everton being knocked out of the first round of the FA Cup.
We want to focus on what's really important.
I'm sorry about it, Roger. I'm sorry about it. Okay, back to the Premier League. Enough of the gluten-free football. We are 20-38 of the way through the Premier League season. That reduces, Rog. That's 10-19.
Kinnell.
And after the crush of the holiday period, there's a 6-team mini table that's formed at the top.
Seven.
No, Rog, Everton aren't in it. Two of those teams clashed in what turned out to be a deserving headliner to this festival of football a week ago Wednesday. Top of the table, Chelsea saw a 13-game winning streak snapped when they fell 2-0 to Tottenham and a reinvigorated Dele. His brace brought his goal total for the 4-game holiday stretch to 7, Rog, and moved Spurs into third, 7 points behind Chelsea.
Oh, finally, a team matches Chelsea's tactical formation.
Yeah.
To fight Antonio Conte, fire with three at the back, fire.
Yeah.
And they came out to tell the tale alive, David.
Yeah.
Because over the past 13 games, Chelsea, they've become so good, not only at playing with three at the back, but also at playing against teams who decide to switch to back three, but are too green to truly master the formation, so easily undone by Diego, Pedro, Vic Moses, seeding confusion in the opposing three. Who should stay? Who should go in a key moment in the game? And I say that as an Everton fan, still in recovery after watching Ronaldo Koeman's side switch to three and have his team go down with all hands on deck 5-0. So what happened, David?
I think Tottenham are a very tough matchup for Chelsea. Tottenham could have taken them at Stamford Bridge for the first time since about 1843, Rog, a few weeks ago when I was there. It's a tough matchup. Tottenham are so good at the back, Rog. I mean, Alderweireld, how good is he? How good is that entire back line of Tottenham? And I thought man for man across the field, there was not a single Tottenham player who had a bad game. They just all were superb. I thought the atmosphere at White Hart Lane was thumping, absolutely thumping for that game. And I think they took them out. And Chelsea missed some opportunities. It was a very late goal at the end of the first half. Early in the second half, Chelsea had a few opportunities. They were a little bit dominant. They didn't score. But Tottenham ultimately deserved the victory. Very, very, very good performance by Spurs.
You know, I love the mental approach of this game because Spurs clearly still stung by Chelsea rallying from two goals down last May to draw the game which ended Tottenham's title hopes.
Previous.
This felt like a grudge match from the off. Tightly coiled game. It was for long stretches of the first half, just a physical stalemate. Wanyama, Dembele, their tactical intelligence and power in the midfield gained the upper hand for Spurs ultimately, with Eriksen drifting round that nagging threat. One who ultimately was a difference maker in creating two identical goals. Premier League teams, this is how you undo Chelsea Football Club. All you need is a Kyle Walker to feed a Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
On that right side, have him drop a pinpoint cross onto Dele's head, right in between Vic Moses and Cesar Azpilicueta. It was all eerily similar to the precision you need to blow up a Death Star.
Yeah, look, in both fixtures, Chelsea had a lot of problems with Christian Eriksen, and he got a lot of space in both games, scored an amazing goal at Stamford Bridge, made both crosses for the headed goals from Dele to score from in the White Hart Lane fixtures.
Oh, but all hail Dele, Davey. 20 goals in just 52 Premier League games from midfield.
Yeah, from England.
And this campaign, 7 Premier League strikes, last 4 games. Not bad for a player who, until the festive period, he looked in danger of losing his way.
Yeah.
Season has kind of morphed through 3 distinct phases. The opening, when he coasted as if he was on some kind of bonus in his contract for the number of nutmegs he performed per game.
Mm-hmm.
That was like his sole contribution. Nutmeg Fight Club.
Yeah.
Against, I think, Mesut Ozil. He then morphed into a salty, frustrated figure, diving, passing the ball back to his opponents after they kicked it out of bounds for a Spurs injury by blasting it petulantly on goal, genuinely seeming a bit spiky. And then this, his second coming at the tender age of 20 years of age, his carbon copy goals. They were symbols of Spurs' renewed roar. That second one coming as it did after Chelsea had return for the second half on turbo boost, only for Spurs to do a Chelsea to Chelsea, waiting for their opponents to overextend, make a mistake, and then clinically punish that mistake. Mm. I've watched the visual of that second goal. Dave colliding with a suddenly exposed Courtois and Moses over and over and over. It's symbolic of the fact that Chelsea, they're mortal once again, David.
Yeah, they are mortal. Having said that, 39 points out of a possible 42. That's a pretty staggering run. Very, very difficult to do it in this Premier League with so many good teams up and down the table. I think Chelsea still played well in this game. I think they were beaten by a better team on the night, but they still played very well. And I think they'll be back and enthusiastic, certainly based on their 4-1 drubbing, John Terry sending off notwithstanding, against Peterborough. They look up for it. They look really excited about it. Oh, my God, it's going to be an amazing run until the end of the season, Rog.
For Chelsea, their winning run, oh, that rippling winning run, is now ended at a bar mitzvah boy even. 13th straight victory. It is no longer lost at Spike Talk, which abounded over the holidays. Let's give Chelsea the title now, which we both agreed was a little premature, but I love their winning percentage.
Conte out.
Yeah. I love their winning percentage month by month. Remarkable to the eye. August, 100%.
Yeah.
September, 0%. Yeah. October, November, December, 100%.
Yeah.
And January, who knows? Leicester and Hull now await before true test. Liverpool and Arsenal emerge at the beginning of February. What do we know now, Dave? 49 points. One more in just over half a season than they achieved all of last campaign. Just the second Premier League team in history to win 13 consecutive games in a single season. Yes, Arsenal fans, after you, 2001-2002. How do you feel about them?
Look, I think the peloton have got to take them out, is the reality. Arsenal have got to beat them. I think Liverpool have got to beat them. I think the peloton, a number of them have got to combine to go and take them out. Chelsea do not look like a side who are going to drop many points against the rest of the table. You know, Chelsea have lost their three games against very, very, very good football teams. So I think the peloton's going to have to take them out, and they're going to have to hope for something remarkable from the, you know, Stokes, Burnleys, I don't know, Evertons of the world.
Yeah, to me, one defeat changes nothing. I mean, Conte will continue, and he said he'll continue with his formation, continue to slay opponents with the relish of a Glaswegian pugilist lurking in the darkness of a Liverpool cinema. Here's a story I loved over the holiday period about Conte. I think the Daily Mail reported it. For his holiday gift, he gave every Chelsea member of staff, every single one, either a bottle of Barolo or Prosecco. I wonder how he decided which got which.
Yeah, it's interesting.
With a handwritten note, with a quote from Hannibal, the Carthaginian warrior, the bloke who once led his elephants over the Alps. I love that story. The more I think about that as an adult, leading elephants over the Alps, the more I love it. His quote was, "We'll either find a way or we will make one," which is just an amazing approach to life. I mean, I can imagine Diego Costa or Kante just reading that note and reacting with just full adrenaline flowing. Mm. Although I do wonder what, like, the parking lot attendant and the janitors sort of, we'll either find a way or we will make one.
Yeah.
And just when you think
he
it
also went to their holiday party as well, which is, I think, surprised everyone at the club.
Oh, he just loves karaoke.
Yeah, he does. He loves it.
And just when you think it couldn't get any better for Chelsea, they jettison Oscar to China for a reported $64 million. It sounds like something out of an antiques roadshow, finding an old vase in the attic and finding out it's Ming, David.
Yeah, the shots of him arriving in China, I've never seen anyone look quite as confused / depressed, overawed by the moment. It's modern football, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, it is a strange Premier League career he had. It's very fitting for him. He arrived with a boom, pair of thumpers, one in the Champions League. And then the more he began to look like James Franco, the more ordinary he became. I mean, we should say about China, because we're getting a lot of ravens about what we think about China and what it means. To me, it's less a threat to MLS and ultimately the English Premier League, more like the 1970s NASL in the Pele boom and bust era that you made a film about, Davey.
Yeah.
With only the winners in this thing being the football agents who are twisting the arms of their talent to fritter away their playing career in return for piles of cash.
Yeah.
Does not seem to be a solid foundation that's all being built on.
Yeah, I mean, there's a temptation to say, look, once again, Chelsea have done an amazing piece of business in a year that they've done amazing pieces of business yet again, see David Luiz. But I have a feeling that every Premier League team is going to do an amazing piece of business with China. I think it's like it's an equal opportunity bank for everyone.
Quick word on Spurs.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, with this win, proven that those writing off their title-challenging credentials did so a bit prematurely. I was in Tottenham in December, making a film about the club, totally blown away by their strategic approach to change. They desperately needed to close that final gap with the top teams. They put together a very thoughtful blueprint to try and leap into the pack with the big boys and make their club long, flair-loving self-sabotagers in their history. If you don't know their history, just Google Glenn Hoddle, Paul Gascoigne, Ginola, Dimitar Berbatov, entertainers who dazzled but never quite closed that gap and never allowed Tottenham fans to watch a team that were true contenders of their dreams. And now they're on the brink of getting a new stadium, an NFL partnership that will add marketing muscle in the US market, a production line of a youth academy that they've got there, and above all, Dave, above all, Pochettino. Oh,
best young manager in football.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's an amazing young manager. Proven in the Chelsea game, he's tactically astute.
Yeah, brilliant.
As much as he is charismatic. I spent some time with him in December. For now, I'll just say, I've never met a man who makes a better noise with his hand when he gives you a high five.
Hmm.
He just cups it perfectly. He just walks around the training facility, just high-fiving everyone, and he cups his hand so perfectly, it just catches a little pocket of air and makes a sharp pop every time.
I was thinking about it as I look at that team, man for man, goalkeeper through the back line, through midfield, so many good players. I would put them against any other team, man for man, in the Premier League. The only place I'm a little bit worried about them is up front. And that's not that Harry Kane has been an amazing Premier League striker. But you just have a question. Also, perhaps strength of squad. How deep do they really go in that team? But Dembele, Rog, that is a guy. He is the most underrated player in the Premier League. He is so strong. He's so bright, as you said earlier, tactically astute. He just piles redwood tree size holes in the middle of every midfield, every defence he runs at. I love watching him play football.
He's just, best way I can describe him, he's Belgian Cameron Carter.
Yes, he's very, very true. Very, very true. Okay, Rog, Liverpool, the team 5 points behind Chelsea in second place. Jurgen Klopp's men took 10 of a possible 12 points over the festive period, including 1-0 wins over Everton and Manchester City, but a draw with ever-exotic Sunderland prevented them from finishing the grueling stretch with a perfect record.
Oh, best start to a season for a Liverpool side since 1990. Not just playing winning football, but astonishingly giddy collective team play unfurled by zealous true believers. It's a wonder on the eye, Davo, when they're not playing Everton. I mean, at best, watching them this season, it is simply life-affirming.
I would say with Arsenal, because of the fact they've beaten them once, these are two teams with a very, very good opportunity to take out Chelsea still. These are the two teams that I'm really watching to go and take out Chelsea at the top of the league.
They're the signature victory, the 1-0 win over Manchester City. Goal coming on their first attack. A soaring header from Wijnaldum, who went full on Air Bud to leave Zabaleta so flat-footed. He looked like a man who doesn't so much defend as just get on his knees and pray. And it is Wijnaldum and Lallana over this holiday period, just symbols of Liverpool's selflessness. They're like wine goblets overflowing with confidence. Wine goblets are really good at team football. And all credit there, it goes to Jurgen Klopp, Kinnell. His ability to construct abundance out of less. I mean, this statistic I love. It's just the greatest testament to his brilliant mind. It's tweeted by Ian Moelim. He said, Pep Guardiola faced 148 different managers. Only five have a winning record against him. Klopp, Ancelotti, Ranieri, Conte, and Roberto Di Matteo. It's an amazing company, Dave.
How about the Merseyside derby, Rog?
Oh, I mean, I'm still numb, Dave. I was numb before kickoff. I was numb afterwards. All I can say is, if you didn't see, it was a 94th Sadio Mane goal, which gave a last-gasp Liverpool win. I was honestly braced for it. I'm so used to it. This game, the derby, is just so much excitement in the run-up. But Everton have won one in 20. The derby has started to make Groundhog Day feel wildly unpredictable in comparison. And I always think back to the 2012 FA Cup semi-final, which I exposed my two then very young older sons to. And they're still scarred by the experience. Everton opened the scoring. A late Andy Carroll goal led to a Liverpool victory. And we left, and I told this story on the pod, witnessing a very drunk Evertonian, a very large, very drunk Evertonian urinating against the exterior of Wembley in the light of day, and he was just screaming to no one in particular, "Why do they always find a way to do us?" And those are just true words, David, that I always think back to and draw solace from, frankly. Yep. That gentleman, whoever you are, if you're listening, thank you for your words of comfort. Now Everton just won, winning 20, and I'm gutted. There was a last game wilt for Liverpool in all of this against Sunderland, which you brought up, was to me down more to the exhaustion of the holiday period. Mm. That Klopp squad, more than any other, shorter bench than its Manchester and its London rivals. And I think there's only so long that the monkey can dance as the organ grinder plays for our delight. So we'll see how they keep up in the second half of the season. But the truly fascinating stat, the holiday period from a Liverpool point of view for me, was a 3 clean sheets in 4 for Simon Mignolet. I mean, anyone who is old enough, I don't know how many of you are out there on this pod to remember the Loris Karius era.
Yeah, it was a poor. I was
feels
a
like
child.
It was months ago.
Yeah.
Huge achievement for this Liverpool side.
Okay, now on to the Premier League's hottest club, Man United, a club that has not lost in the league since October the 23rd. Jose Mourinho has finished the festive period with a 100 emoji. They currently sit in sixth place, 10 points adrift of Chelsea, but with Zlatan Zlataning, anything is possible.
United, 8 consecutive wins in all competitions for the first time. Astonishingly.
They could set a Premier League record, Roger. I don't know if you know, but it would be 14 games on the trot. They could win the record.
September 2009, they've not done this.
Yeah.
And you think about the hot mess at Old Trafford, how it was when he inherited it. If it was a Rubik's Cube, I feel like Jose Mourinho has just finally placed it down after a couple of months of wazzing it around, Dave. Mm. He's just completed it like a happy teen child with braces, probably, and he's cracked the Old Trafford equation. Yep. He's pieced it together. He's finally worked out who his first in 11 is.
Yep.
Some shocks: Phil Jones and Marcus Rojo.
Yeah,
we would never have guessed. Old man Carrick in there alongside Paul Pogba.
Old man Carrick
and Zlatan and Mkhitaryan, David.
Yeah,
not Rashford.
Yeah,
more from young saviour to an English Iheanacho to give spark off the bench.
Uh huh,
and most definitely not old yellow Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, squad player.
And what I'm interested in, Dave, how Jose, in kind of cracking the code, he's become a man transformed. He was the surly, angst-ridden, brooding conspiracy theorist that we kind of know and love at this point. He seems to have become, and you're the greatest Mourinho Kremlinologist, he's become a calmer, more kingly presence.
Well,
a man who's guided the vessel through unforgiving stormy waters into clean, clear, open blue skies.
Well, just 8 games ago, Rog, and probably less than 8 games ago, I think most of the football media and perhaps us were saying about him, you know, asking the questions. Had he lost it? A lot of people, the popular opinion was he's just lost it. He's not generationally, he's not of the same
options either A, yes,
Klopp.
Or B, C above.
He's not like Klopp, he's not like Conte, he's kind of lost it. He's out of touch with the modern player. Secondly, tactically, he's getting out-tacticked all over the place.
Well, he's psychologically frayed.
Yes, and psychologically, undone. He seemed to be going crazier. The unluckiest team in the world, getting sent off to the stands, getting banned from the touchline.
Maybe it
the
was.
Various
maybe
conspiracy
it was
theories
unluck,
that David. He was.
Maybe it was the well, referees. Maybe it was all Luke Shaw's
fault. They'd be unbeaten. Yeah, the way he handled the Luke Shaw situation. Every decision he was making was like, it was a sign, not of just mistakes. It was like he had lost it in the way that he was dealing with it. He is a talented, you might have to bleep this, mother. He really is a talented mother. Underestimate him at your peril. And also, he's got some very, very good footballers at that club. He's
heard
got a very
Zlatan.
Of a few of them.
Heard of him.
He's got some very good footballers. Zlatan is not past it. Zlatan, as you said the other day, what if he'd come in his prime to the Premier League? I mean, watching the way he plays.
But then I thought about maybe this is his prime, mate.
Mkhitaryan is amazing.
Maybe. This is his prime.
Oh,
I mean, it's a 9 goals
take.
In his last 9 games.
Yeah.
I mean, what he can do with his body.
Yeah.
With his martial arts background, his black belt in taekwondo.
Yeah. If Meryl Streep had seen Zlatan practicing martial arts, she would regard it as one of the arts, Rod.
It is an
That's
art,
That's how
Meryl.
Good he is.
It is an art. Watch him. Watch how his taekwondo, it gives him like this unique selling proposition in the Premier League. He's got a flexibility that's an unparalleled asset.
That disallowed goal, even though it was disallowed, Rog, I think, is one of the most beautiful goals ever scored in the Premier League.
But that goal came from the second thing. He's got the flexibility.
Yeah.
But that flexibility, it just gives him a different sense of spatial awareness that than the players that surround him. Mm. And a completely different belief of what is and what is not possible. And your cruelly disallowed goal against Middlesbrough, about which you said, if that's not a goal...
I no longer want to kiss football.
That control flick kick, jabbing the ball past the flat-footed Victor Valdez. Mm. Oh, I just adored it. It was the physical representation of his words that he said before the game when he twisted the knife quote about the English media doubting him. He said in a very Zlatan-y way, like always, I make them eat their balls. Oh, I love it when Zlatan...
I love how bored
he
looks.
Please, Zlatan, make us eat our balls some more. I am beginning to think, Dave, that Ibra is actually underhyped.
I love it, his reaction, when he scores just somewhat good goals. He's so not interested in his somewhat good goals. He really only wants to score something spectacular, something decisive, something in a final moment. He's just, what a competitor. What a footballer. Love watching
him. And he's not the only big arrival made good, suddenly. Paul Pogba, 2 goals, 2 assists in his last 5 league games. Shook that albatross of his price tag mentally, beginning to impose himself. And Mkhitaryan, David Schwimmer. Here, the incorrectly allowed to stand scorpion goal. He's gone from hero to zero in the way of that Bon Jon Jovi track.
Or John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, Bon Jon. Turn back time was during the Copa. I love Bon Jon Jovi. United's last league win of the 2016 year against Middlesbrough. To me, that was the first signature United win I've seen in a long, long time. They were 1 goal down till the 85th minute, then 2 goals in 92nd on Sir Alex's 75th birthday, no less. That was the kind of determined, tenacious victory. Yeah. That Sir Alex's team, do you remember watching them, David, in league play? They'd often be down to like a West Brom or something, and then you'd really tune in a route, and then they would just, Ruud van Nistelrooy would like get one in, and then Ole
with beautiful, dominant football, Rog. It's the style of football. This is the return of Brand Man United.
Which was, the
return of Brand Man
the
United.
The kind of tenacious, glory is by right football that was once embedded in United's DNA. More importantly for Jose, this was a game that United would have... They wouldn't even rally to draw it about 2 months ago, Dave. Question is, how good are they? Are they top four in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said that on our last show with John Oliver.
You don't have to be consistent.
No, but I don't. But I think they are.
No one listens to this for consistency.
I think they've got great players. But this is a... You could make the case, and we said this before in our pre-holiday pod, Rog. You could make the case... For any one of this is what makes this season so
great.
The
top seven.
You could make the case for any one of the top six, Rog. You could make the case for anyone in the top seven. Most people could make the case for anyone in the top six being able to win this Premier League, and it would not be in any way far fetched. And Man United, yes, they're 10 points back, but they are plenty good enough to win the Premier League, Rog.
Holiday wins against West Brom, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, West Ham. You could say those are games you expect to win. This weekend, Dave, Klopp's Liverpool, massive signature test, as Arlo White would say. If you were to bite a pie, Dave, if you were to bite a pie, what would its meat, pastry and prophecy tell you about that game?
It's tough to say, because I haven't actually bit. It's very difficult to think about biting a pie rather than actually biting a pie.
Just dig into that 73% of you that is currently made of pie after doing this for 3 seasons.
If I had to put money on it, I'd say it's a draw.
You would?
Well, it's boring, but I would say it's a draw.
I foresee a United win.
Yeah.
2-1. I see a late goal.
Yeah.
From an unexpected place.
Luke Shaw. We will see, Rog. Maybe Jose Mourinho subs himself on and scores. On the other side of Manchester, it was a pragmatic, if not a perfect holiday stretch. Pep Guardiola's men took 9 of 12 points, including an impressive victory over Arsenal. Yet, a loss to Liverpool and a post-match interview meltdown following a 10-man victory against Burnley led to turmoil and the decision to field an almost full-strength FA Cup side to stabilise matters by walloping West Ham 5-0. City are fourth, 7 points behind Chelsea, but much of the talk surrounding the Etihad the last week or so has revolved around an interview Pep did with a certain familiar bald... Roger.
City of stars, are you shining just for me?
You have such a pretty singing voice. When are we going to do Men in Blazers the musical?
You've got to do the Emma Stone part.
Hard lover. No, Go
ahead. Will buy my video. Oh, Dave.
How did you get to be Ryan Gosling? Anyway, carry on.
Because I got a white tuxedo, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Well done. That's about it.
I'm not sure what I feel about white tuxedos.
Yeah, I like a white tuxedo.
God, I'm more comfortable in the Donald Glover brown velvet. God, he's a beautiful man. It's all been a bit eerie, the City experience. Because the interview that I did inside the mind, the Pep Guardiola film on NBCSN over the holidays, I'd say it was used as a big stick with which to beat him in a slightly unfair way, as we'll discuss. But first things first.
It's the last time you get an interview with Pep Guardiola.
In a footballing perspective, he loved it. Yeah. He did love it. God love him. He's one of those guys, you know, not every bald feels a bald affinity.
Yeah.
We've talked about this. When you see a fellow bald on the subways, you nod knowingly.
Yeah, like Antonio Conte.
He nods knowingly, But Antonio Conte looks away. You know, we're in unexplored, turbulent Guardiola terrain, David. Mm. He's experienced twice as many losses this season, four, as he did at all for the whole campaign with Bayern. He's never struggled like this publicly. He's never grappled with it. He's never been as low in the table this late in the season. So you got this Manchester City, but Manchester City by the sea. It's that depressing and dark, Davo. And I do think there's something wrong in the culture, something fundamental. It's not, all is not well. It doesn't seem to be smooth between players and manager. And you see that in Fernandinho. Three red cards in his last six games for the club. He is to red cards what Iheanacho is to goal scoring. Just seems to be a symbol of the confusion. And what is causing it? What is creating that kind of dislocation between the ideas, the high concept thinking of Pep and the ability of his players to execute? I think it is a massive debate point.
Yeah, maybe. But I think a lot of this is still, I look at it, and I look at the aggressiveness with which Fernandinho plays football, because he's expected to, and I think Guardiola expects them to dismantle these lower tier teams in football, the Burnleys, the Bournemouths, the Stokes, and it's very, very hard to do in this league. And I think he's demanding dominance from his team, and you don't dominate in this league against these teams. Look at the number of 1-0 victories Chelsea had in that 13 game winning streak. You have to defend, you've got to play compact sometimes, and you've got to you've got to compete against everyone because everyone can take you out.
See, to me, the Fernandinho issue and the Kun Aguero one in the Chelsea game is just born completely of frustration. And I think a lot of that frustration comes from both sides. He is trying to, in his mind, just change the thinking of Manchester City. And to change the thinking, you're essentially teaching elite players who believe they know everything that there is about football and they've dominated at every level. You're essentially teaching them how to walk again. Kun Aguero, it's not just scoring goals anymore. You've got to defend from the front. John Stones, you've got to be our creator, the heartbeat of the team. And just in changing the way that the players think about what they're doing on the field, when it's not going as he wants it to, in their minds, it just creates incredible static. Static for footballers often leads to anger. Mm. And his anger in victory against Burnley in the press conference afterwards just comes from that. City are far from a team, his City, that are playing in a way that makes you feel there's a process of change going on. When they win, and when they won over this holiday period, they simply relied more on their biggest players stepping up in key moments rather than because of this philosophical shift in the way they play over the course of 90 minutes. And he's got so many problems, they're not going away. The defence, so many players who make you panic when the ball's at their feet, Zabaleta, Otamendi, Kolarov. I mean, the self-inflicted wound that is Claudio Bravo, fielding him just is like voluntarily juggling with dynamite. Part of me thinks Pep should stop bothering with defenders at all and just pioneer a false back four. Two, I don't think he's got the players that he feels he needs mentally. At the past clubs, he's had PKs, Philip Lahms, Busquets, tactically flexible individuals who are really at ease thinking about football and with the ball at their feet. John Stones, he's just not there yet. He's not rising to the challenge. And third, what you said, Dave, just the hectic nature of English football on the field, but also the fact that every game is a challenge. Pep is a man of thorough preparation, not just preparing his team, but thought time, the thinking work that goes into every detail before kickoff. He wants his team to control the games with their passing, but then he's realised he can't prepare them to. And English football doesn't allow that to occur. What he said after the Burnley game, he said, when the ball is up and down, any team in the Premier League is better than us, much, much, much better at times in the games. And I think that's creating static in his own head. And that leads to the kind of interviews he gave after the Burnley game.
Well, I mean, I think that what I read from that was the incredible pressure that comes with that job. And he has very much gone out there and stated, this is how I want to go and play football. And he's at a battle with everyone, Rog. He's very isolated. He's very isolated at the club, it seems, versus his players, as you just mentioned. And he's very isolated against the media and against pundits. And it's not like I read a lot of people around the world like coming to his defense to go and, you know, stick up for him all over world football. They kind of want to see him, you know, like, oh, well, you know, maybe he's not the smartest guy in the world. Maybe he can't go and take
it. Would be so validating.
He seems very isolated.
It would be so validating, not just for the many of the journalists in England, but for many Englishmen. I mean, first of all, Pep really hates interviews. He cannot stand wasting time, and he sees interviews in a fairly derisory way, which is never a good look for anyone who wants to make it in England. We always talk about Steve Coogan, who once said, and I often repeat it because it's so good, he said, if you give your average Englishman the choice between his success and your failure, he'll choose your failure every single time. Because we do feel better about ourselves when we crap on others. That's when we're probably at our best, English people. And to bring a footballing god like Pep to England and then reveal him to be a false messiah, Fraudiola, which a lot of the tabloids love to write about, it would be perversely probably one of the most fulfilling thing for English people that has occurred in a long, long time. It's hard for me to think about, but the English tabloid media would so love to reduce him, which is where my interview came in, because although I taped it back on December the 7th, which is quite key, it didn't air until December 31st. It actually aired out of context right after he'd given that awful interview after the Burnley game. And many in the media just decided it'd been taped the same day as the Burnley outburst, because it suited their kind of narrative.
Oh, yeah, weird. Amazing that a journalist would do something like that.
And they jumped on his admission that he won't coach into his 60s and kind of twisted it. What was fascinating, one of the first newspapers to quote the interview was the Spanish newspaper AS, who added their own completely fabricated misquote onto the fact. He said in the interview, I'm not going to quote into my 60s or 65s. They added this phrase, which never occurred.
Yeah.
My goodbye has already started.
Oh.
Just...
It was implied.
It was
implied. I don't think you speak Spanish, Rog. I don't think you realize that was implied.
Yeah, it was implied with some kind of a nod. Or maybe the way his eyebrows furrowed.
Yeah.
And then that became the news all over the world, misquoted in a tabloid frenzy that kind of twisted it to suggest Pep thinking of walking out of City. And then it became thrown back at Pep at his next press conference for real. Why did you say my goodbye has already started? Mm. And I feel for Pep. I really do. He is so intense. And the thing that's killing him in the Premier League is a lack of time to methodically prepare. He does think about the process of change that's occurring or not occurring for Manchester City, hence being furious after the Burnley game, even though they got 3 points. He thought his team were absolutely crap in terms of the style of play.
But I do doubt...
And it eats him up, Dave.
But I do doubt that during his job interview for Man City, that perhaps he talked about the most important thing to me is about the process of change.
Yeah.
He might not have said it. He might have said, I'm going to go and win. But even if he did say the process of change, there's no way that the owners of Man City heard him.
Yeah,
they weren't hearing about process of change. They were hearing about, we're going to win the Premier League. We're going to win matches and we're going to...
He's the only one that cares about that process of change. Yeah. Everybody else only monitors him by result. And I think it eats him up, Dave. His heart, his mind, his guts. You think about Jose Mourinho and Pep. They're both 3 years and out coaches. Jose does it by burning out his welcome and destroying everything that's around him like a tyro. Pep's damage is all to himself. It's all inwards. He simply burns out, corrodes his own insides with the stress of the job. At the same time, part of me admires his stress and his discontent because City is still bloody fourth. It's like seen as great turbulence that the plane is still fourth. And to some degree, he said this, I'd rather be worried than calm and relaxed, especially with these contenders. And I'd say City fans who judge this season on the process and not the outcome.
Well, look, let's face it. The managers we talk the most about, and we talk the most about the negative things being said about them or written about them, are Arsene Wenger, Jose Mourinho, and now Pep Guardiola. Bob Bradley, that was new this season. Hardly unsuccessful people. Hardly people who aren't year after year after year challenging for the titles. And it's just because they are held to a much higher standard because they themselves hold them to a much higher standard, Rog. Anyway, enough on them.
Godspeed,
let's move over to Arsenal, Rog. A roller coaster of a festive period that provided Arsenal Fan TV with everything but tonal consistency. Yeah, the tonal consistency that Arsenal Fan TV is really known for. Arsene Wenger's side took 7 of a possible 12 points to leave them in 5th place, Rog. And despite hiccups, one man peacocks out of this stretch with an enormous amount of credit. The one and only Olivier Giroud.
Oh, look what Arsene found under the dust covers in his garage. Bearded and bejazzled. Still sexy's Olivier Giroud.
Bejazzled, did you say?
I just made that word up.
Okay.
Bejazzled.
Yeah. Okay. Bejazzled.
Yeah.
Okay.
It suits. I can't think of a made up adjective that suits him more because you know he is bejazzled.
He is.
You know he is. You don't even have to. If you have to ask the question, then you know the answer. The more he looks like Carl Martino, upstairs and down, the better at football he becomes. And it cannot be a coincidence, Dave. 8 goals in his last 10 starts, including a glut of late winners and that majestic scorpion kick goal, which was simply the single greatest moment of Olivier Giroud's life. And I mean that seriously. Nothing he goes on to do, even if he cures cancer, Dr. Olivier Giroud, will be better than that moment, than that goal.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. I mean, it was one of those things. After you saw Mkhitaryan score the goal, you thought, oh, God, nobody else in the Premier League can score that goal. Of course, Olivier Giroud can do it. And by the way, I've been watching the F2 guys' social media. It seems they can score that goal as well. Unbelievable for Olivier Giroud. Just think how much China would pay for him to go over there, Ross.
I mean, they will be breaking the billion-dollar transfer fee and grabbing him because a player of his quality, Olivier Giroud, his finishing ability, the astonishing good looks, which he is cursed to carry throughout his life.
He's so good looking.
That kind of man can't stay in the Premier League for long in this market. Mm. By the way, Arsene Wenger, he had the quote of the season for me.
Oh, I know the one you're talking about, Rog. Football is like real life, but in a more condensed way, more intense. At some moments, it catches you suddenly. It can be very cruel.
Football is like life.
I want to top myself, Rog.
But that's in a so more condensed sad. Way. So true.
Oh, so sad.
So true.
They can be so cruel.
And so cruel.
Can be so cruel. He hates losing, Arsene Wenger. He hates losing. I'm not sure I've ever seen anybody else in sport who just loathes losing. I know there are people who have like the individual moment of losing, but when it occurs to Arsene Wenger that they're going to lose, his reaction to losing, his post-interviews about loss, like everything, it is just...
You think there's like a panorama of like... football managers from Arsene Wenger.
He experiences it deeper than anybody.
On my heart, every wound is a scar. He's on one side. You think on the other side is like Steve Bruce, who seems like just like a happy little fat man with his team. I'm used to it.
You win some, you lose some. It's all right. Yeah. Oh,
talking about losing. Go on.
Bob Bradley lost his job. We did mourn the Premier League passing of American manager Bob Bradley over the break. He was relieved of his duties after 11 games and 85 days in charge of Swansea City.
Yeah, Meryl Streep. How could you not spare a thought for bloody Bob last night in his speech? Because we are living in a post-truth, post-Bob Bradley world, and I don't like it. Experiencing Bob's doomed Premier League tenure. God, it was such a fleeting 85 days. Said on the show, it was like watching Hodor futilely attempt to hold that door, Dave. I've got so many emotions. It's firing. It just... broke a dam of emotions, David, that I'm still experiencing. How do you make sense of it all?
I think there's a lot of noise all around it, Rog. The ridiculous criticisms by some English fans and some in the English media. And it was a minority. It was not a majority about the words, the American soccer language that Bob used.
Rogaine.
Game. Yeah.
Kyle Beckerman.
Cleats. There's all of that noise.
Fanny pack.
I think ultimately the American owners of Swansea have got to take a really hard look at themselves and think about whether they did right by both their fans and by Bob Bradley putting him in that position. To come to that team. I wish it had not been American owners who bought Bob Bradley in.
And they need to do it quickly, Dave, while they still have a Premier League club to own. But I think you're absolutely right, because it is an incredible schism between how we view the Bob Bradley morality tale here from America and how Swansea City fans experienced it. We all feel terrible for Bob on a personal note. I mean, watching him drag himself around the globe on a managerial journey that was kind of half Homer's Odyssey, half National Lampoon's Vacation, dreaming of reaching the promised land And unlike Moses, he made it. And then it lasted his time in the promised land about as long as a Ronda Rousey fight. I mean, it was just a clash between British parochialism and American footballing hopes and dreams. And from an American point of view, he arrived in Swansea as an elite coach with all the experience, the tactical nuance. He deserved the chance to get a real job. I mean, Bob had wandered in the wilderness only because there was a bias against us in America and our American coaches. He deserved the shot. And he was a standard bearer for Americans who care about the future of the game. But to Swansea fans, and just try and put yourself in their shoes for a second, Bob's appointment was just lunatical from the very second he arrived. Imagine if you'd never heard of Bob Bradley for a second, and you had this once proud club that was slumping under new American owners,
yeah,
who you don't trust,
yeah,
who you don't believe in. And then they say, guys, we've brought a new manager. And they bring in an American, from your perspective, from minor leagues. I mean, yeah. The Premier League, how many managers have arrived from Norway's Tippeliga and the French AAA equivalent before, David?
Yeah, and also bear in mind the manager turnover at Swansea over the last...
Revolving door.
Yeah, it's been a revolving door over the last few seasons. And then forget about the fact that we love Bob and we look at his experience and being he took the only jobs that were probably, not only jobs, but he took the best jobs that were being offered to him. But you look at the background of him coming to the Premier League, the Egyptian national team, Le Havre, in the, what, second level of French football?
Ligue 2.
Meanwhile, they're looking at the teams they're competing against. They're looking at where the managers, the background of those managers, where they're coming from.
How many pies they can eat.
Yeah, exactly.
And then your team experienced 7 losses in 11 games, leaked 29 goals, which is probably most damning statistic of all, while conceding 3 or more 8 times. And there's no margin for error in the Premier League. You can't wait and give someone a month of grace. I mean, the amount of money that is lost in relegation means you have to make snap decisions. And the saddest thing for me, with Bob's firing, the tabloid parochial British perspective, the one that chorused for Ryan Giggs to be appointed in the first place, that laughed at the use of the words PKs and road games quite cruelly, they feel vindicated, when in truth, it's what you're saying. It was really Swansea's poison reality, a squad unrecognisably depleted, slew of slapstick transfer decisions, that revolving managerial door. They mean that Bob's tenure, it was far from his fault, as I think Paul Clement, the new manager, is going to discover.
Some in the American media, and I wouldn't equivocate that to my criticisms of some appalling people in the British media of how they treated this, but some in the American media who, after Bob's first 2 games, very, very loudly went out there and said, all of these issues, yes, these are a bad start, but all of this is fixable. At the point that none of it was fixed, to then say that the firing was some combination of anti-American, unreasonable, not being given a chance, you can't have it both ways. You can't have it, it's all fixable, and yet, oh, it doesn't matter, now you needed more time to go and fix it. You don't have time. With relegation, you do not have time. This is a very, very different league to the one we have here in the US. This is what happens.
3 big takeaways. Number one, we don't need to watch Swansea City games anymore. Thank God. They're the Swansea, the club. We've had so many people tweet in.
You were distracted. Yeah, got completely distracted off Everton's season by Bob bringing it Swansea.
Swansea in America have become about as popular as Shooter McGavin in this country. But the number of people who've tweeted us like, my Swansea City jersey has just arrived. Oh, now I don't want it. What can I return it? It's just amazing. Number two, not as funny and dark, really. There may not be an American-born manager in the Premier League for a generation. I mean, Bob really was a canary in the mineshaft, not for just American-born coaches, but I think all coaches who come from kind of the new footballing world. And that shockingly brief tenure, it will be long remembered within the Premier League, which is an incredibly conservative, incredibly risk-averse culture. It will be known as a cautionary tale. There will be no repeat for a long, long time.
Do you know where I would like to see an American-born manager, Rog? In the Championship. I think an American manager would thrive in the Championship. It's just the kind of league. Producer JW nodding. He knows from the Championship. It's just the kind of league where an American manager could thrive. And, you know, weirdly, the way it works, Rog, the best teams in the Championship get promoted to the Premier League. Managers in the Championship get noticed and they get offered Premier League jobs.
It's arguably where Bob should have gone.
Yes,
to build up his name, build up his credibility.
He should have waited till Swansea get relegated next season. Then they should have brought him in.
And when we said there'll be no American ball manager in the Premier League for a generation, the manager in the Championship that I'm guessing a lot of you are now mentioning, David Wagner of Huddersfield, yes, he is American, but he's not American born. Born and grew up in Jurgen Klopp territory near Mainz.
Mainz, in Germany,
which is a world of difference, the footballing culture you grew up in. But as a number of you have tweeted, the sad reality is the next American manager in the Premier League may not have even been born yet. Mm. And finally, for Bob, I feel his pain. I know he's suffering. I know he wants to get back into the managerial saddle quickly. I know he wants to challenge himself again. I believe he will ride again. Les Reed left Charlton as the single worst Premier League manager ever. I think he'd lasted about 40 days. Mm. And then went on to become the director of football at Southampton.
Yeah.
And he's not known any longer for his 5 losses in 7 games, but he's known as the man who oversaw a club which has regenerated itself with youth like no other. In the same way, whatever Bob chooses to do next will be something we'll all watch and follow along with,
yeah,
with wonder.
Absolutely.
Because of the way that Bob does it, because even in his darkest hour at Swansea, he never stopped carrying himself with value,
absolutely,
and class in the same way as he carried himself in success.
Absolutely. Godspeed. Good luck. Okay, Rog, for all of the players and managers who complain about fixture congestion during the holiday period, they have no idea how hard it is to manage a fantasy toggle team during that time.
God, no idea.
Props to the four GFOPs who won
in again.
Week. I know, me too. Props to the four GFOPs who won week 17 to 20 in our league. The
cheaters.
Mr. Reynolds, H. Reginald, Tim Musblows, and Cool Trainer Charlie. A patch is on the way to all of you.
Jealous of each and every one of you.
It's a weekly game, so it's not too late to enter. Just download the Togger app and sign up.
10,000 GFOPs competing.
I know, more than 10,000, Rog. Trust us, there's no better way to start 2017 than cursing Petacek's 0.25 points against Bournemouth.
Do you know what,
we both
do you know what number I am in the league overall?
What are you?
666.
Well,
is that symbolic of something?
I don't know. I've not heard of that number before. Okay, Rog, in less than 24 hours, players will report to their first US men's national team camp under Bruce Arena 2.0. The Southern California gathering ahead of friendlies with Serbia and Jamaica. Two very similar squads, Rog, in a few weeks' time. For scheduling reasons, Bruce's roster contains only MLS players, and despite the player pool's homogeny, diversity exists by way of a special ginger. New York Red Bulls captain and GFOP Dax McCarty has been welcomed back from international football's Siberia.
Yeah.
Not Serbia, who the US men's national team will be playing in a friendly. That's a joke about Siberia.
Oh, Dax McCarty, who's also going to arrive late because he's getting married. What a 2017 that ginger's having.
It's better than Kevin De Bruyne's.
Oh, I'm thrilled for him. GFOP Dax, and also for Benny Fellharber. MLS players who felt shut out by the old regime, they now have a chance for international redemption. God, I hope they arrive with swagger at this January camp because the US team, it needs it.
The US women are also scheduled to begin a 10-day camp in Southern California later this week. I wonder if they'll have a disco.
Like at summer camp.
Yeah, it comes after the players' union and US soccer failed to agree on terms for a new collective bargaining agreement by the December 31st, 2016 deadline.
Come on,
the old
Sunil.
CBA is in place as negotiations continue.
Yeah, I mean, as that dispute drags on, you've got this wild reality in which the stronger European powerhouse club teams who don't care about parity and don't think about the future of the National Women's Soccer League have just pounced and plucked several of the top American players, perhaps frustrated by the quality of the coach class flights and the subpar training facilities and fields in the NWSL. And they've decamped for Europe. Crystal Dunn, her move to Chelsea is now permanent. Amazing. Alex Morgan, 6-month loan to Lyon from Orlando Pride, for whom she'll miss the beginning of the NWSL season. It's going to be fascinating watching her. It's a real chance for Morgan to challenge herself in the Champions League and to be trained in Lyon, who treat their women's team from a coaching perspective as they do their men's team. Hmm. And also to gain some leverage in the ongoing negotiations with US Soccer, who will not want this talent flight to become permanent. Could there be more? I wouldn't be surprised, Dave. I'd love Manchester City to solve their Claudio Bravo problems by signing Hope Solo, resummoning instantly.
That might usher in a whole other level of problems.
How do we get Joe Hart levels of tunnel craziness in one fell
that's
swoop?
That's very true.
Let the epic tunnel scenes ensue. While we're talking about it, Mazel Tov to Carly Lloyd, locking up back-to-back FIFA Best Women's Player of the Year awards. That's a terrible name for a title. Now they're not in the Ballon d'Or brand. She locked it up today. Carly is actually going to be jumping on the pod at the end of this month. So send in your questions for her because we cannot wait to host and celebrate her.
Brilliant. Brilliant, Rog. Okay, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Sack Scribe, Raven of the Week is David Fraser. Dear Men in Blazers, over the holidays, I had the good fortune of seeing my 78-year-old widowed great-aunt for the first time in a while. She lives in Augusta and is a walking encyclopedia of all things golf and the Atlanta Braves. As far back as I can recall, she's never had any interest in soccer.
Good on
while that. Chit-chatting, I mentioned my burgeoning obsession with the beautiful game. Almost immediately, she said something like, "Oh, I love that guy with the voice."
The voice?
Guy with the voice? I said to myself, she must mean Arlo White. Arlo White? I asked. No, not him. Then I started down the list. Graham Lasso? No. Lee Dixon? No. Steve Bauer? No. Robbie Earl? No. Robbie Musto? No. Not Kyle Martino? No. Getting to the end of my list in desperation, I half considered tossing out Rebecca Lowe's name. Throwing me a bone, she said, "I'm ashamed to say he's a bit lewd at times." "Roger Bennett?" I asked. Her face lit up and she started gesticulating, pointing, "Yes, yes, that's him. I love his accent. I could listen to him talk all day." All of which to say, you have a fan in Augusta, Rog. All the best in the new year and go the Toffees.
Oh, I love grit. I don't know what to say about that, Davo. Apart from your American, your Southern
accent. That's one of my finest cold reads. That was one of my best cold reads in history.
I just say,
it won't come as a shock to anybody that I don't rehearse.
Part of the mediocre success of Men in Blazers, I think, is our difference.
Yeah.
I'm Northern.
Yeah.
Davo Southern.
Yeah.
I'm a pessimist.
Mm-hmm.
Davo eternal optimist. And I realise...
You can remember things. I can't remember anything.
But I engage the over 70s crowd.
Yeah.
And you engage those below the age that you join the American Association of Retired Persons.
Yeah.
And that's what true partnerships are about.
Yeah, very true.
Synergy. Rob. So hello, great aunt. Yeah. Welcome, friend.
Welcome. 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 Okay, your weekend looks like this. Saturday, the last two Premier League champions square off as Antonio Conte visits a man who's slightly less Italian, but infinitely more avuncular. He's also got more hair, Claudio Ranieri. Leicester versus Chelsea begins at 12:30 p.m. Sunday starts with Everton versus Manchester City at 8:30 a.m. That's followed by Man United versus Liverpool at 11. All
massive
of those games are on the NBC family of networks, Rog. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon Fridays, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. When it basically gets tiny post changes, the last is kind of a classic reading show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book!
Oh!
War and Turpentine.
Yeah.
By Stefan Hertmans.
You love turpentine.
Did you get this book yet? I told you to get it. Did
you
ignore that?
And I haven't.
It's the last book I read in 2016. It's also the best book I read in 2016. Yeah. A Flemish poet delves into 600 pages of his own grandfather's diaries to time travel through generations of his own family story for the essentially what turned out to be medieval conditions of 1890s Belgium through to the First World War and on into modernity. He calls it a novel, but it's really equal parts biography and autobiography. And he asks all the questions that anyone should want to ask themselves: who we are, how we got to be this way, via the horrors of war, how they shape us in ways that are really profound and so deep that we're not even aware of them ourselves. Ultimately, it's a book about how an incredibly ordinary life on the surface turns out to be extraordinary. And the twist at the end, I'll just say this, it will tear at you emotionally and just lift you in equal measure. So read it, please read it, because this book is a modern classic for this wild time in which we live.
Roger, I don't know about your kids. My kids spill a lot of things. We spill a lot of things. I can't do anything
turpentine
about their spilling of liquids, but I can avoid glasses breaking at the same time that they spill their water. They're big water drinkers, my kids. I don't drink enough water. You're drinking water right now. But they're spilling a lot. But the problem is, so I want plastic tumblers, but the problem, as parents out there, you know, with plastic tumblers, is one, they're not usually dishwasher safe. And secondly, they crack and then the BPAs come out and they're not very good for you. So I have to recommend the IKEA Callus 101.929.56 BPA-free tumbler in assorted colors. They come in a pack of six. How beautiful are those, Rog? They are beautiful. They are dishwasher safe. They're BPA-free, Rog. And they're just fantastic. They're designed by Henrik Preutz. I could really see him in the Premier League one day. He might actually be a Premier League coach, manager, player, director, something like that. Fantastic stuff. They're a bargain, Rog, at I think around $10. They're fantastic for a pack of two. Very, very
don't take
good.
Away my tumblers, don't take Rog. Away my BPAs.
Yeah, no, exactly. You don't want them, Rog. You really don't want them. Okay. Visit meninblazers.com to sign up for our newsletter. The first issue of 2017 goes out this Friday. I have the amazing story of the Afghanistan women's national team and a piece from aforementioned GFOP and Plymouth Argyle part owner Simon Hallett on his side's trip to Anfield this weekend. You can follow us on Twitter at meninblazers, at Embassy Davis, at Rog Bennett, on Instagram at meninblazers, at Embassy.
Come on, the pilgrims.
At Embassy. _Davies on Facebook, Men in Blazers. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunkt, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung fu fight in America. Mm. And if you don't shut up, I'm going to glass you.